A lot of sci-fi and semi-sci-fi stories are really obsessed with the idea of super soldiers. And look, to be fair, super soldiers are fucking cool. Spartans, Space Marines, Final Fantasy soldiers, mobile infantry, Sardaukar, all of them are pretty cool. But there's a lot of issues with super soldiers as they're portrayed in fiction. Most commonly in horror-adjacent media, of them being uncontrollable rage monsters that can't tell the difference between friend and foe. Or being animals, or being weird biological mutants. So then, if we were to make super soldiers ourselves, how would we do it? And is it even worth it? On this episode of Why Aren't You Talking About This? Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Wait At. I'm your host, William, and I will be your guide as we perform crimes against God, man, nature, and war. But before we do that, I just want to thank you guys so much for watching and listening. It means the world to me that you're taking an interest in my stuff, as random as my topics are. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe for more, and check out my shorts and follow me on Twitter for announcements and being kind of unhinged. And as always, make sure to check out Winkoshka on Twitch. They're streaming pretty often and are an amazing watch and are with friends pretty often. Also check out Mystic Luna on their Shopify and TikTok. Their Shopify is linked below if you want some very pretty jewelry, cool resin and clay sculptures, and some cute stickers. Let's get on with the show. Alright, time to commit some horrific crimes against morality, genetics, and the Geneva Conventions. So when you first start making a super soldier, where do you want to start? The logistics. See, because in order to make a super soldier, your society needs a few things. Well, actually, you need to lack some things. First and foremost is the right to your own body. Because if we're making super soldiers, we don't want them to retire, obviously. So we can't have anything like rights getting in the way. If you don't have this one, then the public is going to go fucking loony. We also need a public and military infrastructure that doesn't really care if people are being experimented on and being turned into Fallout-style super mutants. Because again, the public will go fucking loony. You're also not going to get any volunteers. But the third thing you need is an enemy. A really scary one. Because let's be fair here, if you're a dominant power, there's no pressure to change your approach to warfare. And of course, you need the knowledge, technology, and money to do this. So we need to be a country that's not in a dominant position, has no rights for their people, a culture that doesn't care about people being turned into monsters, and the money and technology to pull this off. And you might notice, but I'm not slowly fading in the flag of any country. Because there's not a country around like that today. Because the countries with resources, technology, and trust in their agents enough to do this are dominant, and they don't really have any reason to, or have a public that would be fucking pissed if Bobby was abducted at 18 and turned into a space marine. And the countries with the resources and lack of human consideration are very rare, but exist. But they either have no pressure to change because they're incredibly powerful, or they don't trust their agents enough to get it right. So we need a hypothetical nation with the ability to produce super soldiers that don't care about their citizenry don't care, but are losing their military power and hegemony to powerful enemies that are quickly moving past them. We're not going to say it, and we're not going to think it. But we also need to talk about the realities of warfare. Because here's the deal. It's all fine and good to have someone who looks like a space marine and moves like grandma after the incident, if you're doing the realities of Bronze Age warfare, where mobility is incredibly low. But in modern warfare, they'd fail so fucking hard. So we need to work through the modern realities of war. First of all, modern warfare has a much higher level of precision than in the past. While large-scale attrition and extended engagements are traditional, it's not feasible anymore. So now we focus on brief surgical strikes with fire and fade tactics, skirmishes, and drone warfare. And one of the biggest reasons for that is the lethality factor of modern weaponry. Because modern weapons are highly destructive in a blink of an eye and can entirely obliterate a person and their surroundings, it's not worth it to form up an attack. But despite that, casualties are still relatively low, because the investment in individual soldiers is much higher, and most militaries rely on well-trained professional volunteers. I mean, even if they don't rely on that, the PR regardless for letting soldiers die is much worse than it used to be, and war weariness happens much faster. So because of that and modern medical advancements, there's a great focus on an ability to keep soldiers fighting and alive. Normally, if someone can get to a doctor before things get too bad, they'll live. But because of that and some other factors we're going to talk about, there's also increasingly blurred lines between soldier and civilian. Because soldiers in military installments tend to be near civilian populations, the weapons of the military are so devastating, and warfare happens at a speed that's hard to get out of the way of. And since there's a bigger focus on not killing civilians, which is a good thing, by the way, asshole, then it's very important to be aware of. And because of all that, stealth warfare becomes particularly common. Soldiers don't really get in big formations and attack each other anymore. Instead, an entire intelligence war is fought behind the scenes, and soldiers are deployed quietly and stealthily before suddenly and explosively acting, usually as kind of like a checkmate to end that fight. And since war relies heavily on intelligence and surveillance, remote warfare is becoming more and more common. Basically setting up drones, remote sensors, passive detection and observation, surveillance systems, and espionage. All of which to set you up for counterattacks, holding the line, or performing preemptive strikes. Which paradoxically to everything else we've set up to this point is actually what we'd call static warfare. When you're defending your territory in modern warfare, it's common to set up zones of influence and control that your soldiers just, you know, kind of chill in a centralized location within, then no one in their right mind would try to bum rush until the enemy reveals themselves, and then the troops mobilize in that region to fight them off. Warfare nowadays is also multidimensional, with air, land, sea, space, and even internet operations influencing the battlefield, and these realms often crossing over and heavily interacting between each other. And this cross-interaction has caused command to see war even more on the campaign level than we've seen previously in history. Meaning the focus is less on individual battle wins and more winning the overall theater of war. And like I brought up earlier, technology is heavily integrated in every aspect of combat. From targeting software to comms to hacking the automated bomb drones and satellites, technology is and always has been a major aspect of combat. And finally, warfare is exceptionally fluid and adaptive, which means soldiers have to be able to switch tactics at the flick of a dick, and commanders have to be able to jump between tactical and strategic views of the battle in dozens of different situations. From firefights, including naval bombardment and AC-130s, to tactical stealth missions comprising of five dudes. Which means everyone has to adapt to changing conditions. So with all that in mind, what are we looking for in a super soldier? Well, really what we'd want from a good soldier. They need to have a pretty high strength, able to fight up close, have good grip strength, be able to take some recoil, use muscle-operated equipment, have good power recruitment, and strong anaerobic capacity and stamina. They also need to have good physical endurance, have a high carrying weight endurance to carry heavy shit, great stamina and aerobic capacity and flexibility, strong reflexes and speed, be well-balanced and coordinated, be agile, and have strong senses. But it's not all just physicality, because we want our soldiers to have integrity, honor, and accountability. Basically, be willing to follow rules, but also be willing to report commanders and other soldiers for poor behavior. We want them to be disciplined, respectful, loyal, selfless, courageous, and be leaders. No mindless murder machines. That's not a good soldier. Mindless murder machines suck at war. Not only do they give you bad PR, but they don't take orders very well, which means they're easier to trick, harder to recover, and vulnerable to damage. They should also be adaptable, have some good mental and emotional fortitude, high critical thinking skills, good communication skills, and a team mindset. Notice how very little of these things have anything to do directly with killing people. Because for a good soldier, that shit is handled with equipment. What you really want from a soldier is someone controlled, reliable, hardy, and experienced. Which brings us finally to our super soldiers. And for engineering them, we're gonna go from the physical stuff we listed earlier and work our way down the list through the mental stuff. And from the beginning, most of our muscle-based and aerobic and strength stuff can all be dealt with at the same time, with something similar to what we did in our superhuman episode with super strength. And we're just going to modify someone to have the same power as an untrained superhuman. Stronger isn't really necessary, since we're looking for someone able to perform very physically intense anaerobic-based tasks, rather than someone that can turn a human into a perfect cube. But this still means a lot of modifications and drugs. But even before we start drugging people, when you're scouting for people to pick for this program, you want to pick people that have a high genetic potential for strength, since about half of it will come from your genetics. But once you find that person, you'll want to pump their body full of nutrients, HGH, testosterone, epinephrine, norepinephrine, thyroid hormones, and estrogen, like what we covered in that episode. Then train them hard as fuck with the best strength workout recovery diet routine you've ever seen. And no, we're not going to do the stupid, like, peel their skin back and implant muscle shit, because that's a really good way to cause immense physical trauma for what is probably no good reason at all. So, assuming we go about this in that better way, you'll want to address a lot of the downsides we discussed on the superpower episode, beginning with the bad joints and back, which can be helped through proper recovery and a diet high in protein, water, and omega-3s. And holy shit, are omega-3s going to be very important this episode. Now, your training is also going to have a pretty good focus on core strength, proper form, stretching, and good cardio, which is also going to help with some of the heart issues, but we're going to make sure to get them some heart-healthy vitamins and minerals as well. Also, if you're in the military, like, I don't know a whole lot about the military, but one of the few things I do know is that they teach you posture and proper form, like, from the beginning. They drill that into your brain so deep that it will never come out. Now, the weight of each soldier might not seem like much of an issue, but if your troops are about 6.5 feet tall and over 350 pounds of muscle, modern military vehicles are really going to struggle to carry a good number of them. Which means, yes, we need bigger vehicles for our muscle mommies and daddies. Which is going to be a lot of engineering time, but will maybe be worth it. Now, we also got to deal with some of the problematic parts of these hormones, and since we're role-playing unethical scientists, it's not even about the quality of life things we're absolutely strapping these people with. Testosterone increases your irritability, aggression, moodiness, sex drive, risk-taking, and the risk of blood clotting. All of that is really bad for a soldier. HGH increases the risk of cancer and carpal tunnel and causes depression, swelling, and diabetes. IGF causes increased neurodegenerative disease. Epinephrine and norepinephrine can cause high blood pressure, constipation, anxiety, depression, poor sleep, and restlessness. And thyroid hormones can cause a lot of fucked up conditions with hyperthyroidism. And estrogen can cause brain fog and memory issues. So how can we deal with these things? Well, testosterone issues and also some of the things associated with higher levels of adrenaline can actually be handled with serotonin, which we don't just inject into them. It means we're going to fill their diet with tryptophan and complex carbs. These boys are going to be sleeping real well. Now, for the HGH and IGF, we're actually going to address those by using physical therapy, periodic fasting, some mild ketosis at opportune times, and then cutting these hormones when our lads get big enough, which is actually not too far into their training. Because the thing is, being massive in modern combat is not an advantage. You want less surface area for bullets to be able to hit you. Hence why we're not going for the massive 7 to 8 feet tall seen in other settings. Now for the other parts of adrenaline, we're going to give your boys even more water, high fiber, probiotics, high potassium and magnesium, and more omega-3s, which pair with antioxidants, good sleep and plenty of socialization, and thyroid medication, means we'll also cover the estrogen and thyroid hormone issues. Although at this point, their diet is absolutely lab-made slabs of nutrients with flavoring jelly in it. Like those prison bricks the worst people on Twitter think that poor people should get instead of food stamps. Get bent over and fucked if you believe that, by the way. No lube. Now, the only things we need to add on here to cover physical endurance, load carrying, stamina, and aerobic activity is a few things that'll honestly probably be just as hard to actually do as the stuff above. So, to make sure your soldiers have some endurance and can carry heavy shit for long distances, the first thing we can do that'd probably be easier is use CRISPR to artificially inflate the number of mitochondria per cell in the body. Which means you're definitely going to want to double up on those antioxidants from earlier. Also, they're going to be eating a lot more, since this will increase their appetite. Now, on top of that, we can increase heart and lung efficiency. But since this requires a lifetime of constant active work and heart and lung health choices, we're going to cut some corners and instead perform some risky experimental surgeries. Because why else are we making super soldiers? So for the heart, if we increase the size of the left ventricle, which controls blood pumping out to the rest of the body, then we'll have faster blood flow of oxygen and nutrients. In addition, let's add an air sac to the lungs that fills up with extra air on deep breaths to oxygenize that blood flow. But how do we fit that in the body, you might ask? Well, I mean, the truth is that there's not really a good place for it, since, you know, biology and evolution don't really allow for useless empty cavities. So let's modify the rib cage to be a tiny bit more flexible and add it to the top of the lungs. And yes, this is going to be a very painful recovery and also just a painful life in general, but we don't care because we're not ethical scientists anymore. Oh, we can also use CRISPR to modify blood cells to make them more efficient carriers of oxygen and nutrients, but, you know, that's not exciting, like decreasing someone's quality of life forever is. Now, in terms of general reflexes and movement speed, you're going to want someone that's genetically predisposed to speed. Again, like the strength. Since, again, the majority of your speed potential is genetic based on the layout of your muscles. And we're not just going to rearrange your muscles. You're actually going to get helped out quite a bit from the muscly, brawny body for the explosive power and fast-switch muscle fibers needed for acceleration and speed maintenance. But for your reflexes, that's unfortunately going to be physically capped. Although we can make your brain process information faster through cognitive training and computer brain implants, the human muscle can only respond so fast. Even if we implanted new nerve bundles closer to extremities, like at the base of your spinal cord, to increase automatic reaction speed, you're not going to reach insane levels with organic muscles. Meaning if we really want some crazy shit, like dodging bullets, then we'll add in some highly conductive wires, nanorobotic chains of fake muscles, and little computers to tell them what to do. A bit easier for us to figure out is the balance and coordination aspect of this. While it can be trained, both can be quickly and easily improved upon with brain-machine interfaces. Meaning, ear and brain implants again. Now, what implants are we talking about? Well, the easiest for balance would be sensors that are highly sensitive to motion, sending impulses to the nerves that control balance throughout the body, including proprioceptive nerves and the ones in the inner ear. Coordination can be handled in a pretty similar way, with electronics around the spinal cord and cerebellum to aid in detection of and transfer of electric signals, like controlling motion and sorting impulses when the cerebellum gets overwhelmed. Which these two things combined makes a soldier that is incredibly maneuverable and capable of performing insane trick shots and firing from weird angles, since their proprioception is off the hook and they don't really get vertigo. And this only gets better when we check out agility. By combining all the modifications so far with training, agility is going to be high, but we're also looking for someone with genetically flexible muscles and bodies. But on top of that, we're going to put these people under the knife and do some fucking around with their joints. I kind of lied earlier when I said we weren't going to rearrange your muscles. Basically, you can surgically reshape joints and use a combination of chondroitin, glucosamine, and you fucking guessed it, omega-3s, to help with both healing and increasing joint flexibility. Of course, this is going to require some very close health monitoring, but we are already going to do that, considering that, you know, these guys are probably not going to live very long. Now, the last easy thing we're going to tinker with is the senses. Now, what senses are you really using on the modern modern battlefield? Smell? Probably not, since the very strong chemical smells, blood, and sweat might not be super beneficial. Taste? God, I fucking hope not. Touch? Yes, but probably not more sensitive than we already have it. Sight and hearing? Oh, absolutely necessary. So how do we improve them? Well, for sight, you can give humans increased vision range and clarity through the implanting of bionic lenses. They're perfectly designed for long-distance clear vision. Now, to protect that and for extra utility and resistance to chemical agents like pepper spray, let's also give them a second transparent eyelid, like a lizard. We'll also install a nifty little device next to your eyeball that connects to their visual processing center to basically give them a HUD, including the ability to highlight things in real time. Of course, since we're dealing with soldiers, we also want to be able to fight at night, so we'll give them night vision. Through a gland, we'll implant around the eye that absorbs up-converting nanoparticles, a substance that can increase the sensitivity of rods and cones, from their diet and bloodstream and push them into their eyeballs on command. Of course, these chemicals are incredibly dangerous and can pass the blood-brain barrier, but that's why this organ also absorbs them. Don't think about the fact that it's pretty goddamn close to the brain. It's probably fine. And for hearing, the first thing we're going to do is give the cilia in the ear the ability to regrow or self-repair. Now, usually this doesn't happen because the cilia is replaced by cells that don't replicate cilia. But in this case, we'll have a specialized set of cells that produce cilia cells when they don't receive a chemical marker that the cells exude. And we can also use nanites floating around in the inner ear to help with damage repair. We'll also add a detector wire to pick up subtle noises too low for the human ear to distinguish well, and a hearing aid that can filter through sound and pick up potentially dangerous noises like distant gunfire, shouting and talking, and footsteps. But how do we protect against loud noises? Unfortunately, no, we can't. Loud noises are just kind of unavoidable, unless we do some real wacky shit, and if that's the case, we're better off just using a good quality helmet. But as a result of all of this, you're essentially getting a double-jointed Eddie Hall that can't be made dizzy, has the coordination to use both hands on entirely different tasks at the same time, can sprint at you at 25 miles an hour, can see in the dark and hear your heartbeat, and has a steady diet that gives him barely controlled roid rage, and the endurance to prove we're the dominant species. And this is even before we start messing with brain chemistry, or I introduce ideas to cover the aspects of warfare we don't currently expect soldiers to be able to do. But before that, let's tinker with their brain a bit. So how do we instill integrity, honor, accountability, discipline, courage, and selflessness? Well, select for it. See, while these are linked to the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex and the frontal lobe, that doesn't mean we can really selectively increase those. So instead, if it's just a massive part of their training that we reinforce through proper rewards and nutrition, then we should be able to get it. Although, to be fair, we might not care too much about integrity, given that we're just tossing any sense of ethics out the window. However, we can engineer respect, loyalty, leadership, and a team mindset instead of earning it like you should, by ensuring their serotonin, oxytocin, and vasopressin are all high during training. And hey, wouldn't you know, that's something we're already doing to them. By increasing these hormones, they'll form deeper bonds, have more trust, and have increased confidence. And now we get into brain surgery. We can improve their mental resilience, courage, adaptability, and critical thinking through a two-step process. Step 1, damage the amygdala. This will reduce its firing strength in response to threat and fear, allowing soldiers to not react out of fear or terror. If we then boost the prefrontal cortex with oxytocin and surgery, they'll be able to objectively react to stimuli and be far more resilient to mental strain. Added on to an artificially superpowered and well-trained frontal lobe, their critical thinking and adaptability is through the roof. And being a good communicator is helped from all of these processes. So now let's get into the freak sci-fi shit. So since we don't really have anything to deal with the high lethality of warfare, let's get that taken care of. So if you're usually able to get someone to a doctor in time, odds are high that they survive, then we just gotta make sure that they make it back. So then what's the two most common reasons for soldiers to be killed in action and be unable to make it back? Well, those would usually be brain injuries and catastrophic hemorrhage. Which is where we come across our first problem in dealing with this. Because these aren't like bump and fall brain injuries. No, they're getting shot in the head. So the best way to biologically prevent this, you might think, is a thicker skull. But actually, the thickness the human skull would need to be to stop a bullet is so thick that Pixar moms would be jealous. Which is not a good thing to try to balance on your neck. Now, we could try to implant something in the skull, but most of our options are going to have similar issues, like steel or ceramic. So let's just do a middle ground approach. We'll increase the skull's thickness a little bit, just like maybe half a millimeter or so, and add in some carbon nanotubes crisscrossing the skull. Now, this won't stop a bullet by itself, at least not any actually used in combat, but when paired with a helmet, it absolutely can give you the fighting chance to get away with at least most of your brain, if not all of it. You might still end up with a hole in your head, but that's better than no brain. Now for the hemorrhaging. Since we have some extra serotonin, we're already getting some help on the blood clotting thing. But that won't be enough, especially for catastrophic bleeding. So instead, we can modify the platelets and red blood cells. We can make platelets release extra ADP and thromboxane A2 to attract more platelets to the injury site and activate them faster. And we can modify the red blood cells to carry a lot more platelets and release ADP as well. Meaning we'll have very fast clotting around an injury with both the free-floating platelets and the ones clinging to red blood cells working to close the wound. Which should get you enough time to get to a doctor in case we're risking a runaway chemical reaction that causes all of your blood to clot. Which is a gross thing to think about. But okay, that's all fine and good. But this still requires the logistics to get people in to carry these soldiers out. But what if we eliminate that entirely by making them able to get to the doctor themselves? And to do that, we need to identify why people aren't able to do that by themselves. Those being pain, trained reactions, shock, and falling unconscious. So let's begin with the easiest one. It's a common thing for people, in combat especially, to collapse when struck by a bullet or shrapnel, even though there's no nerve damage or bleeding that would cause you to fall over, because it's a trained reaction from watching war media and as an instinct to stop the person from hurting you more. Which is sad, but also, if we just train our soldiers to instead fall back and assess their wounds and try to fall back to a medic instead of falling over, that will probably take care of that issue. Next, easiest to address is the pain. In order to reduce this being a factor, we'll add in a pain suppression system, which in this case is going to be a fuck ton of hormones when they get hurt. In response to a massive pain signal, their body is flooded with massive amounts of endorphins and oxytocin to suppress their pain enough to make our super soldier get up and walk to a medic. Especially because we're going to flood them with enough of these hormones, they're probably going to be fucked up medically for a while, so they should just get to a medic anyways. Now, given the strength and coordination these large lads will have, we can be fairly confident they're not going to injure themselves too much more on the way back. And even if they make the wound worse, with everything else they have going on, we'll probably be able to at least stabilize them. Now the hard one. Shock. Because here's the thing, shock is actually beneficial to your survival. And as the heartless bastards we are, we can't just make them ignore physical shock. That increases your survival. So you don't want to prevent that, but the psychological shock we could try to prevent by reducing the amygdala's function. At least temporarily. Now, instead, a way to make sure that soldiers get back if they go into shock is to give them power armor that, like, gets up and walks back home with them inside of it if they go into shock. Alright, and our final thing. Technological integration and remote operations. Because of warfare's reliance on technology and intelligence, there's really good odds you're going to want your soldiers to be good at them. Which normally means a lot of training. But we don't want to do training. We want to cut corners. So instead, we're going to use a brain-machine connection point. In this case, since we're talking about military stuff, we might want to do a few steps in between to make sure that there's some security measures. So we'll have a brain interface to their armor that then interfaces into any other electronics across your military. Meaning with some more brain implants, they can even connect things like their sensory processing center directly into a drone they control with head movements, or plug themselves into a vehicle, or connect wirelessly to surveillance equipment. While sure, there's a tiny little side effect of potentially allowing hackers to get access to their brain, we could just add a safety feature, quote-unquote safety feature, that just, let's say, wipes the hard drive if someone manages to break through. Hey, I never said that we were opposed to digital lobotomies. So now we have our super soldier. Standing at an impressive 6'5" and about 350 pounds muscle, capable of punching harder than Mike Tyson at his prime and running as fast as Usain Bolt at his. Flexible enough to compete against gymnasts and with the coordination, reaction speed, and processing speed to fire handguns while juggling them. That can see in the dark, can hear someone's footsteps from 500 feet away, can dodge bullets, survive massive bleeding, and maybe even tank some rounds directly to the fucking chest. That are incredibly selfless and brave and willing to follow all of your orders, and can even access your entire military's electronic system. But, look, there's an elephant in the room with all of this that we should end on. All of this, this entire episode, it's entirely unnecessary. And look, I get it. Super soldiers are cool, okay? I agree with that. We can all get behind that. But we don't have to do this. See, humans are complicated and complex. We're not an easy machine to understand. If one day a doctor watches this, they'll probably be able to point out all the ways this would never work or be a massive mess or just kill the person we're doing it to. But you know what would be easier, faster, and significantly cheaper? Power armor. All of this, literally all of it, can be offloaded to suits of power armor so fucking easily. I mean, think, we're already basically putting a computer in this person's head. And guess what? Power armor isn't a fucking war crime. And against the enemies of today, power armor makes a super soldier entirely unnecessary. Mjolnir armor? That shit would rock a modern battlefield. Tacticus armor? Would fucking waffle stomp an army today. And guess what? If you make power armor, you're gonna have grunts lining up out the door to wear that shit, becoming government property for life and getting massively damaging surgeries? Absolutely not. They're gonna mutiny the second they get the chance. But there you have it. Thank you for listening. If you have opinions, improvements, corrections, and anything else you want to talk about, comment below or email me at waytatpods@gmail.com. That's waytatpods@gmail.com. And remember to like, share, and subscribe for more. And follow my podcast feed for audio versions. And come back next time when I explain eating curdled milk. Have a good night. Don't murder. Have fun. And remember, maybe the real super soldiers was the crippling disabilities we made along the way. This has been Why Are You Talking About This? I've been your host, William. Good night.